we've learned anything from these past couple of years, my fellow Americans, it's that personal medical freedom and liberty are in crisis. America Out Loud Pulse brings together the top experts in healthcare-related fields to keep you a beat ahead.
Just over 500 years ago, the Reformation led by Martin Luther in Germany was an attempt by Martin Luther to engage his faith system, the Catholic Church, in a dialogue. It was an attempt to break down walls that had entrapped those who were perpetuating it as well as those they were supposed to be serving. It was a challenging event. Martin Luther was threatened with his life multiple times. It was very stressful for him, but he was obligated to maintaining the standard of what the scriptures clearly stated. In so doing, he challenged those in authority to post along, and this was in the context of seeking answers with his seminary students. What is going on? 95 theses were posted on the cathedral door, and the rest is history, as they say. Do we need a new 95 theses for COVID? Because clearly, the popes, the bishops of the science world in America and in the world at large have clearly been serving themselves, not those that they should be serving. So is it time for a scientific 95 theses? Welcome to our weekly Tuesday podcast. Thank you for joining us. I'm Dr. Stuart Tankersley with Jordan Vaughn. Jordan, what do you think?
I think it's a very unique analysis to say that currently, in very similar fashion, the clergy of science is under pressure, just as the Pope at the time was under pressure. And there was one man, a man that was just a seminary student, that said, everything I'm reading and learning disagrees with the prevailing views of what the current church, pope, under bishops, all those things were doing. And he had the audacity and, in all honesty, the courage to question it. Now, amazingly, I don't think Luther's goal was ever to ultimately cause a schism, but instead what he wanted was to return what he had devoted his life to back to its original principles. And I think, again, that is where we are. Now, I will say, during that time, much like in the current environment where we are able to get the information, we are all able to see the data if we want to. We are always able to request it. We're also able to crunch it in science. Similarly, during Luther's time, it was the printing press. It was the translation of languages. It was the ability for seminary students to read the scripture that basically called into question the authorities, really authority, because it didn't line up with the authority that the scriptures had given them. And so in a similar way, we live in an age where an average mom in Georgia can find out that the FDA during their meeting 2 weeks ago was using terrible data in regards to children's underlying maladies over the last 2 years. It took her to cause the papers to be changed. It's in that same vein now that our clergy is under the pressure. And there's two ways to respond to that pressure. One is to kill off and muzzle the questioners, or another is to approach in faithful and honest dialogue and have a hashing out of what has been done and what continues to be done to society in the name of science. So what do you think?
It is amazing. It is an amazing time when recently some of the leaders on our side of this issue of COVID have been threatened by the National Academy, by their the Internal Medicine Board, the American Academy, or the American Board of Internal Medicine are threatening these heretics, because that's what they're deemed as. They're deemed as heretics because they're daring to follow the science, the truth, or seeking to follow the truth. They're questioning the authorities' abuses. They're questioning the authorities who have gone on, who have gone back on fundamental principles, and not only gone back on those principles, but have thrown them in the trash, burned them up, made their own rules. And these people, like Dr. Vaughn and myself, and Dr. McCullough, Dr. Corey, Dr. Malone, and hundreds of others in the country, are saying we cannot sell our integrity to perpetuate this disaster. Just as Martin Luther did, the 95 Theses were way overdue. It was an invitation initially for dialogue. Of course, they, instead of seeking dialogue, they sought to silence him. And that is exactly what is happening. These doctors that I mentioned were internationally recognized for their expertise for decades in their specialties. And then they were dismissed as editors of certain journals, and certainly now are challenged with their own certification for board, for their boards. It sounds very similar to what Martin Luther went through over 500 years ago.
Yeah, and I would even follow up that and say the similarities continue, where all Martin Luther did was point to the scripture,
right?
And say, where did you exert this authority? McCullough, Malone, Corey, all they do is point to the data. They point to the published literature, and they point to outcomes. And I will ask, over the last 24 months, who's been correct and who's been wrong? Now, again, we're not always right, but I would say that the analysis that we even spoke about a year ago, Stuart, is now common parlance. But a year ago, we were considered misinforming people. But now that's actually considered valid information. So
yeah, that's a very
that's the thing that continues to bother me, is that it's there's no going back. If they get to be wrong, they get to continue to speak with mistruths, and no apologies needed. They're not even called to be questioned about their past statements, except maybe by a congressman like Ron Johnson or Rand Paul. But instead, they just get to change as it goes.
And like Dr. Fauci did with Dr. Paul, Senator Paul, lie with no repercussions.
Exactly.
I don't know if we've mentioned it, but a couple of months ago, I found out this past week that the Federation of State Boards, which is an independent group that oversees or helps all the state boards, they voted in their annual meeting a couple of months ago to censor doctors. That they encouraged the states to censor or somehow punish doctors. 65%, 35% said what they shouldn't, because these doctors they deemed they wanted to punish were misinformers. When I heard that, the person that told me that, my first question was, what is the statute of limitations? Because these lies that continuously come out, if the statute of limitations is 5 years, boy, we've got reams of books showing what where they have been misinforming everybody to the detriment of so many. And so the key question, once again, it comes out, it's probably going to be a legal challenge to all these insane policies and actions by those on the other side who have abdicated their responsibility of looking at the science, looking at the evidence, instead of listening to their pope and priests that are dictating a new form of science, even though they say they claim to represent science. You know, that might be an interesting point to make when Herr Fauci says that I represent science. He may be telling the truth. He represents the new science.
What I have classically termed now scientism, it is a religion. You are able to pay homage to it. Your sacrifice is your left arm and your and actually your livelihood, your life, your neurodegenerative, your neurological system. It is they have a actually they even have a uniform. It's a mask. And it also includes proselytizing, which usually means being belligerent to people that don't follow their leader. And so, again, it does what I will, interestingly enough, why there's similarities here is because it does go back to the fact that much like the Pope and Luther, this was a belief system. And science isn't really a belief system. Scientism is. And I will tell you, that's what's been promulgated across the world and especially across America. And it has been basically it's the false image of what science is. Scientism is political. It is money hungry. It is power hungry. And none of those things are what basic true science is.
Right. And then the same along the same line of thinking in a different way. Back up in more recent history, the Nuremberg trials, there were three principles that the Nazis were being tried for. And they were crimes against peace. I think that the unsettled world that we're in now, when riots are called a peaceful protest or whatever a couple of years ago, when lawful protesting, like what's been going on recently and all across Europe, everything's turned on its head. So I think these people could certainly be tried for crimes against peace. The second charge was crimes against humanity. Of course, it's we have been experiencing an assault on that like never before in our lifetimes. Yet in spite of that, there was a beautiful reminder 2 weeks ago with the reversal of Roe v. Wade that there is still an appreciation at some level that there is a love of humanity in some. And so the loss of life, the loss of freedoms, the destructions wrought by all these actions by these ill-intended individuals, very, very self-evident. And then number three is a waging of aggressive war. And this bioweapon certainly fits the bill with that as well. What do you think, Jordan?
Yeah, I think even, when we talk about crimes against humanity, it's not only the things that they're putting out and pushing through, it's also the things they withheld. So it's not as if they put somebody in a fire, they also withheld water. it's deeper than that. That's one of the things that I've always had trouble with even explaining when people say, well, why would they do that? Hmm. And the answer, I really don't have an answer. I mean, the Lord will be able to, knows their true intentions and their true heart. I definitely don't think many of these people that are making these proclamations and causing havoc on people's lives and not giving hope to people that are sick, I don't think any of that is found to be biblical.
I think that
then again, the world is not a biblical place. It's a, you know, it's a fallen state. So right. It's,
and yeah, when people ask me that, I congratulate them on asking the question simply because this is insane. But I think the reasons, they told us the reasons. Dr. Peter Bregan and his wife, Ginger, wrote that best-selling book recently, COVID-19, The Global Predators, We Are the Prey. He clearly defines how this has been planned for and actioned. And it is very sad that that they are doing this and they're allowed to get away with it in any degree, but they've been unfortunately very successful in their eyes. So the question, when anybody asks me that question, I congratulate them on thinking, how could this happen? Because that's an indication of this person can't fathom of the evil. Yeah, we can't ignore it any longer. The truth is they are actioning the plans that they have been making for decades now.
That's yeah, it is. It just their concern for the plebeian or the average citizen is not yours, and that's the problem. So again, this is Dr. Jordan Vaughn, Dr. Stuart Tankersley on America Out Loud Pulse. We are our Tuesday evening edition. We are a group of physicians representing really most of Alabama, but Concerned Doctors. You can go to concerneddoctors.org to find out more about us. But we are a group of physicians that are in some ways hopeful, but also understanding of what reformation involves in our profession. And that reformation has to happen, or else our profession and the people it serves are doomed.
All right, you've all heard Malcolm and the great Dr. Peter McCullough talk about the povidone iodine-based nasal spray Cofix RX. They talk about it because it's a product that actually works in combating colds, flus, and coronaviruses. Cofix is made in the USA and recommended by thousands of doctors and pharmacists nationwide. It's simple. By attacking viruses where they incubate, you make it easier for your body to heal. Check out the Cofix RX banner ad on AmericaOutloud.com and save 20%. By using promo code OUTLOUD.
Many Americans worry about their health 4 times a day. That's 120 times per month. To minimize the worries, leading nutritional supplement company, Healthy Cell, created Immune Super Boost, an immune supplement that contains full effective doses of science-backed nutrients like vitamin C, zinc, elderberry, and echinacea, all in a one-a-day, pill-free, ultra-absorption ingestible gel. Supporting a strong and resilient immune system can be simple. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code America50 for 50% off any order of Immune Super Boost. That's HealthyCell.com, HealthyCell, and use code America50 for 50% off.
Welcome back to America Out Loud Pulse. Today, we thank you for joining Dr. Jordan Vaughn and myself, Stuart Tankersley. And we have a simple question in this segment. If you have two different opposing views on any subject, and both sides claim to have experts, and over time during that running debate, you notice that 0% of people on one side change over to the other, yet slowly people from one side start changing their mind and joining the opposition. It's very telling, I think, when that happens. When one group stays to the facts, sticks with reality, truth, in the field of law, truth is the best defense. When truth is allowed to reveal itself over time, and other people on the other side of an issue accept it because it is immovable, You cannot get around it. When that happens and other people come to the side of truth that continues to reveal itself, it's not built on a house of cards. It's not built on shifting sand as the Lord used in a parable. It's built on the rock of truth. When the truth reveals more and more aspects of itself, it's telling that nobody from that side transitions to the other side. Yet other people from the opposition, they can't get around it and eventually have to accept it. And so I think that's the perfect analogy we are in now. I know of no physician who has begun on the side of questioning the narrative, who has gone to the other side and bought in to the narrative. I know of none. Jordan, do you?
I think the plenary of people is on the opposite side, which is, again, I mean, at least at this point, is our side. I will say that approaching new things with a question is an important thing to be a good scientist and doctor. And what I mean is there's a lot of people who've gone on TV and declared things. And even though they haven't been called out on it, when you evaluate their declarations with future results, what you find is quite a bit of inconsistency. And I will say one thing that you can always tell if somebody is a good scientist and somebody who basically is trying to find truth in observation, and truth meaning things that are continually repeatable and are basically, I mean, we would call them laws, but things that happen in sequence all the time, you know, without fail. And somebody who understands, first of all, has humility in the context of what we know, and especially humility in the context of God's design of our bodies, and also knows what he doesn't know, which is enormous, that it is rare for people in that vein to make declarative statements, especially on preliminary data. And I will say that's one of the things that I think I respect of Stuart, I respect in most of the guys in our group, is first of all, we always start with a question and we're always open to a new answer. Because it is when you don't start with questions and you pre-close your answer that you end up being embarrassed and hurting people in medicine. What do you think, Stuart?
Yeah, without question. If people haven't woken up to the reality that the medical industrial complex has failed us in unimaginable ways simply because they backed away from the foundations and the principles under which we all started, with the scientific method, with questioning, with objecting, requiring people to convince based on evidence. That is not allowed, as we know. It's just truly tragic. In the next segment, we're going to be talking more about the science that is exciting and new. But it's what a tragedy about it is, nobody has been doing this science up until the last few months. Something that should have been done at the beginning of this disaster.
And even then, not by people who would have been typically, or not in typical roles by people that, you know, really were being paid and with your tax dollars to be ahead of the game. So the people that are ahead of the game are the people that ask questions and weren't told to not ask them. And I think that's, I think it all happens a lot of times in science. I think one of the things about science is we do sometimes need bodies that can purvey science and can accumulate science, can give us protocols. Most of that stuff is is things about the past, things that we know a lot about. But when those infrastructures and those, you know, those settings are trying to do the same thing on something we know very little about, all hell breaks loose. And I think that's what happened. I mean, I always go back to the fact that if I was Fauci, what I would have done would have said, y'all, we don't know anything about this. And we don't even have a treatment. But there's a ton of things that all of y'all know and all of y'all are learning. And there's no way in heck that the NIH or CDC or FDA could even come to accumulate or you know, tabulate the data that's available out there. So go do it, and we'll pay to keep up with the outcomes. And that would have been saying smart doctors on the ground, go try what you got.
Yeah, that was completely rejected and dismissed and discouraged because I remember watching a video. This is, I don't know if I've shared this with you, Jordan, before, but I remember watching a video when I jumped in the deep end on this subject back in February and March of 20. And it was of Fauci telling us that that he was going through a list. He was being interviewed, and he was going through a list of many of the infectious disease threats going on around the world. And this was in 2005. So in 2002, 2003, we had the first SARS. And then in 2004, there was an article, study, that showed that hydroxychloroquine and chloroquine were effective against SARS. He said in the 2005 interview, I remember explicitly, we don't have to worry about SARS. We've got the cure for it, chloroquine, hydroxychloroquine. A couple of months later, I went back searching for that, and the video couldn't be found. And the whole point is, to people who think that he has rejected the advancement of investigation, that is unquestionable. Why has he done it? I think it's unquestionable now, given his prior statements and everything. But he has rejected the investigations of things he himself had said were beneficial. And it's very unfortunate that he has compromised himself. I know he's not compromised himself financially. He has done very well for himself financially. But it's very unsettling. And what's another irony of this whole situation, I don't know if we've brought it up before, but his wife is at the NIH, and she is the lead ethicist for the clinical division of NIH, I believe. So here is the Air Fauci, whose wife should be in charge of ethics for how medicine at large is practiced, and her own husband is clearly... Maybe he has dismissed her and the principles that she should be standing upon, or maybe he's co-opted her and her authority in that role so that he cannot be held liable. But the truth is that he rejects the science. He is the master manipulator. He has a lot of blood on his hands. There's no question about it. And we're here to offer hope that, yes, truth matters, that we want to give you the opportunity to rejoice with the truth, but also to question the authority, because I believe that, as Dr. McCullough said, in March, April of 2021, the vast majority of Americans had decided they were not interested in the vaccine. Less than 35% of Americans were not voluntarily getting the vaccine, and then along came the mandates.
And then think about the booster. With each successive rollout of the booster, less and less people are on board. So again, as you started this conversation off, if you were in their camp and you haven't had your booster, you're on our side. Because again, you've started to question what they promulgated. And maybe it took 2 injections, 3 injections. God forbid it took 4. And you're sitting here going, I regret the 4th. But it didn't take long. And that's one thing that science, unlike in Martin Luther's day, when who knew if an indulgence actually worked for your family relative after they were gone, which is the beautiful thing about the Pope's proclamation, right? In science, we deal with facts and reality and people's lives. And so if there's something that is promised and the outcome is the exact opposite, as well as harm is caused, it's very hard to ignore when a family member, a friend, or somebody else has been harmed by what was told to you as truth.
Yeah. Remember at the beginning, vaccines, completely safe, completely effective, and then they rapidly changed that to safe and effective, and now we know they are neither. And here we are with the mandate or the clearance for 6-month-olds to 5-year-olds getting the vaccine, and we have less than 10% of patients, of parents, clamoring for their child to receive it. Of course, that's a wonderful indicator to me of the inherent wisdom of a parent in our culture not buying into the narrative. If they were so enthralled with the successes that were so abundant around us, why wouldn't they run to get these jabs for their children? It's clear they don't trust them, and they shouldn't trust them. There's no threat to the child from the virus, from dying from the virus. And here we are with a vaccine that poses inordinate threat. As a matter of fact, Dr. Steve Kirsch did an assessment several months ago that showed that the rare child, the exceptionally rare child that dies from it, there is one of those for every 115 that die from injury from the vaccine. 115 to 1, not good odds. But I think the parents and the people of our country see through the lies and deceptions, and they are not buying this for their children.
And the ultimate consequence, and this is a biblical concept as well, that the destruction is going to be to our children and our children's children. And what I mean is the medical profession. I think that the damage that has been done for the credibility of our profession and the ability for us to be trusted with people's lives, livelihood, and children not only should be questioned, but will be questioned for many years to come. Because again, the cover up a lot of times is worse than the crime. I mean, I honestly feel that if in January or February of 2021 that Fauci, all these people said, look, we were wrong, pull these things off the market, I think there would have been forgiveness.
Sure. Because at that time we didn't know that there was such planning and scheming for decades. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it would have. But that is the reason that they – You sit there and ask, well, wouldn't somebody come in and say, look, we were wrong? And a lot of times that again goes to how deep is the crime? And how far back does the cover up go? And I think that's where you start to question a lot of things. And the problem is they're taking the medical profession as a ship down with them. And there's a lot of great doctors I know that if they were awake to the deception that they have been basically bought into, they would be horrified at the years that they're going to have to regret this. But again, I guess prayer and listening is what is needed. I think it's...
At what point do you think we're going to start? How long do you reckon it's going to take before we start teaching humility to the medical students and using this as the saddest, best example of it?
I mean, I think it would take restructuring our medical education system away from academic research in the NIH. I mean, I think it, I think the hubris that is involved in ivory tower medicine, compare Tinsley Harrison to even the people that are currently at the UAB Academic Medical Center. As we would say, just like we would say, Washington would be rolling over in his grave. I think Tinsley would too. So in terms of what's been done.
Right.
It's just not.
When we come back after the break, we want to talk to you about a recent science of what's going on with the virus and innovations and true science that's going into researching how to possibly help those who have been injured by the spike protein, whether it is by the vaccine that produces so much, that causes our body to produce so much of this toxin, or the virus itself. Thank you for joining us. And Dr. Stuart Tangersley and Jordan Vaughn of Concerned Doctors welcoming you again to America Out Loud Pulse.
It's summertime. Ready for your vacation to the beach, the lake, or the mountains? But what about your accommodations? Ever wonder what germs were left behind by the previous guests? Kathy G. from Tulsa says the Genesis Fogger gives her peace of mind and confidence when traveling. With Genesis, she knows that the air and surfaces in her vacation rental are free of bacteria and viruses left behind by the previous occupants. Visit genesisfogger.com/outloud to receive a 15% discount on the Genesis Fogger with promo code OUTLOUD. With Genesis, you'll be ready for what's next.
As Americans, we seek to form a more perfect union. To paraphrase Abraham Lincoln, we are a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. And God willing, we shall not perish from the earth. AmericaOutLoud.com. Liberty and justice for all.
You wouldn't go a day without brushing your teeth or washing your hands. What about washing your nose? I mean, your nose does filter the air you breathe, air loaded with bacteria, viruses, and irritants. Make nasal hygiene part of your routine with Clear. No messy bottles to fill, no drowning sensation. Clear is a natural drug-free saline with the added benefit of xylitol, which blocks bacterial and viral adhesion. Available in stores and online at clear.com. That is X-L-E-A-R.com.
Given that we've talked over the last two segments about real science and how questioning and questions themselves are what is important in science, I think it is a good time to talk about a couple developments. One of those developments was an article that was finally published by a group of physicians that I know and have respected in their understanding of what was COVID. And the title of this article, it'll be in the show notes, is "Are Amyloid Fibrin Microclots Central to Long COVID?" And this is July 8th, 2022, and it is finally appearing in a mainstream hematological journal. And what you will find in this is two scientists, not physicians, but scientists, Risa Pretorius of South Africa at Stellenbosch, and Doug Kell, who is also a PhD at the University of Liverpool, who have and continue to explain what is actually going on and what makes COVID-19 so dangerous. The problem with this explanation is not that it's not correct, it's that it's inconvenient to the narrative that the spike protein is without harm.
Yeah, he's going to challenge the paradigm, and he's going to, and this brilliant Oxford graduate, highly decorated scientist is going to do is he's going to challenge the unacceptable. And the unacceptable is the silencing of dissent, the silencing of questions. He is going to challenge it with hard facts. It is going to change the paradigm by which hopefully sooner rather than later, the scientific community, the medical community is going to start helping people around the world against COVID's spike protein and the jab's spike protein.
And in addition, all the people that suffer from long COVID. And what's unique about these individuals, and this is why I think it goes on to prove why our institutes are not good at evaluating new problems, is that Doug Kell at University of Liverpool is a biochemist. Dr. Pretorius is a expert in clotting. And her collaborator, physician, is just a private practice physician who wanted her to evaluate blood as he saw patients suffering in his hospital. And that physician's name is Dr. Jaco Lobsher. And what's amazing about Dr. Lobsher is he's a cardiologist that cared enough to try to figure out what actually was causing this new disease. And what I'm going to go ahead and start right now is a 2-minute video that Dr. Lobsher actually released to YouTube to help people treat COVID. And the date on this video is June 2020. 3 months in to when this had hit Africa, America, what he was seeing, he decided to question what was going on and come up with an answer to why it was different. And again, the problem with that was that it went against a narrative that in many ways, Stuart and I have already discussed, almost seemed like it was pre-decided. So without further ado, Jaco Lobsher, and this video will be attached to the show notes.
Good evening. My name is Jaco Lobsher. I'm a physician in private practice at the Stellenbosch Mediclinic in South Africa. I'm here today to try and convince you that the management of COVID-19 is an important factor and we should stop barking up the wrong tree. This is a vascular problem and not a respiratory problem. Tonight I'm going to try and convince you of that fact and hopefully equip you better to save lives. All over the world, reports were found that there's some anomalies regarding these patients. Patients become severely hypoxic despite having normal lung compliance. Increased reports of thrombotic complications in spite of therapeutic anticoagulation, usually using heparins or low molecular weight heparins. And poor outcome of patients that progress to full ARDS despite optimal therapy. Consistent finding of thrombi in the microcirculation of the lung on post-mortem studies. If we look at the elementary unit, functional unit of the lung, it's basically an alveolus and a blood capillary, and that's where gas exchange happens. So if you look at these patients clinically, you listen to the lungs, there's actually not much sounds to be heard. The patients have got a normal mechanism of breathing. And early on, when patients are being ventilated all over, intensivists would tell you this is hot. The patient's ventilation is actually quite easy, normal lung compliance. So from that, we can deduct the compliance of the lung, the alveolus, is normal. So if the patient is severely hypoxic, the only thing left is the vasculature. So you've got a blocked blood vessel proven on post-mortem studies.
So again, he did use some technical terms there, but basically what he did was he analyzed what was going on in his patients. He looked at reports. He looked at autopsy findings. He looked at the differences between these patients and what was normal when we talk about pneumonias. And he said one thing, which was, it's not explained, by the way we're treating them. And I think the problem with medicine right now is most of the physicians decided to treat them based on a protocol for a disease that they knew about, not the disease that was present and they didn't know about. But what Jocko did was he said, why is it different? And then used his brain, and he goes on to explain why, if it is the vascular system that is the issue, why the vascular system is an issue. But he also goes on to say, with that information, guess what he's able to do? Come up with treatments. God forbid that a physician use his brain that way. But again, this person, if this knowledge was disseminated, and I will sit here and say that I did not appreciate this until probably December of 2020, probably January 2021, after I saw my first vaccine injured patient that had an elevated D-dimer and had abnormal vascular issues. And so, because at that time there was very limited, most people that got COVID went straight into the hospital, and there was very little outpatient management. So we didn't really get to get our hands on people. But once we started getting our hands on people, it was quite apparent that exactly what Jocko is describing there. So what do you think about that? The guy in June of 2020 explaining what is now just being appreciated today.
Right. There's the only reason, only thing that can explain that is the fact that there's been an intentional, there has been an intentional disregard for true scientific, the true scientific method in proving anything to be beneficial for humanity against this virus, other than what was pre-planned for, and that is the vaccine or remdesivir. What a disaster. All of these, I just want to ask this, take this opportunity and say to any of our listeners, if you know of a physician that doesn't, that's been unwilling to engage in any discussion with you or anybody else, please direct them to this video, to our interview today, and ask them to please investigate that simple explanation of what's going on. If they cannot refute it, hopefully they will have the humility to say, I need to back up and do some homework.
But it's even more surprising was actually after reading the article that came out that is attached to this podcast, Are Amyloid Fibrin Microclots Central to Long COVID? The interesting pronouncement here was in the second paragraph that said, at the start of the global pandemic, COVID-19 was thought to be a typical viral pneumonia with acute disseminated intravascular coagulopathy. However, it is now accepted that COVID-19 is primarily an endothelial and vascular disease, which may help to explain why some patients experience long-term symptoms and why COVID-19 affects so many tissues and organ systems. That paragraph is 100% true, except for the fact that I'm not really sure what it is now accepted means, because I actually have had many a specialist, even in Birmingham at UAB, say, well, you're post-COVID, you need to see a pulmonologist. And the problem is that is a misunderstanding of the very disease they're trying to treat. And so, although it is now accepted in the medical literature that it is this way, for some reason, our institutes are not disseminating good information down to the doctors taking care of you, because this is not accepted among the everyday personal physician that everyone is seeing in their community. I would say that, I don't know, would 1% might agree with this, Stuart? I mean, it may not even be 1% in Alabama.
Yeah, what's so sad is if it's less than 1%, probably, the question has to be asked of the doctors that have been unwilling to engage in the pathophysiology and the underlying injuries. Why have you not joined the fight, other than just, okay, I heard this works, so I'm gonna throw it at it. For example, ivermectin, well-studied, extremely the safest medicine available, with over a dozen mechanisms of action against this virus and the inflammation it causes. Why don't you know that? Why don't you know that hydroxychloroquine has been beneficial? Why don't you know that vitamin D has been beneficial? And if you don't know, I think by now most would think that it is beneficial, but why is it beneficial? Let's go back to the basics, folks. Let's look at the science.
I would even go one step further. You know, I was talking to some surgeons this week that they need to know this because it should decide when they are going to perform an elective surgery. Because again, if somebody has recently had COVID, recently been vaccinated or boosted, if a surgeon wants a good outcome, and I have seen some awful outcomes recently for surgeries that should never have had awful outcomes, that, and those outcomes are clotting issues or throwing off clots that they would have never predicted. And it's a misunderstanding, even of the physicians that operate on people, that this disease and this vaccine is incredibly thrombogenic. And because of that, nothing should be operated on, especially elective, in the context of either a recent jab or a recent infection. And so, again, that shows you how important this knowledge is. Most people would say, well, I'm just a surgeon. But again, when it's a vascular disease, it affects everything. And that's why when we see people with long COVID, when we see people with vaccine injuries, the plurality of symptoms, there's just so many. But what Doug Kell and Risa Pretorius were able to do is, and basically an Occam's razor type analysis, is to say, and I will again then go back to Jocko, because of his knowledge in June of 2020, was treating his patients day 3-4 if they had hyperactivated platelets, and he was able to analyze their blood, which is a unique situation. He would start them on the therapies, and his therapies were anticoagulants and antiplatelets, and none of his patients had any long COVID symptoms, and none of them had any complications. So him and Risa, again, being the scientists they are, and Doug Kell, said, well, I wonder why none of your patients have long COVID. And the interesting thing was when they analyzed the blood of his patients, none of them had persistent fibrin deposition or persistent microclots. And so then it begged the question, like science should do, is this what causes long COVID? And they, a private practice cardiologist, a coagulation PhD, and a systems biology biochemist, they found the answer. These are people that aren't on the dole of the NIH. These are people that, especially Jocko. Jocko, again, sent that video out not to make himself famous, but to take care and save lives. How many times have you heard, anybody else say that recently? It's amazing that that he did that, but at the same time, his interest was in saving lives, not in getting accolades, not in getting TV time. And you should see the number on that video. First of all, it's been watched incredible. I think it's like over 100,000, 300,000 times, which for a video is pretty crazy. And it has 400 comments, mainly from doctors thanking him. That's the person that is doing the right thing.
Yeah. That's a doctor doing what he's professionally is obligated to doing, and that is investigating, trying to find answers to problems that heretofore they haven't been able to solve. And it's a blessing to have this type of insight and the firepower behind him to be able to dedicate his time.
Yeah, and again, this isn't a Fauciite like that gets paid for research. This is a guy that just wants to answer a question because it helps his patients. God forbid we still have those, Stuart.
Yeah, right. Reminds me of the lady over in London who was the in charge of the yellow card system. Blanking on her name, it'll come to me in a minute. But she ran her clinic, epidemiology, I think, her job, her office. And she put all things aside in December of 20 when she heard the testimony of Dr. Pierre Corey. And she said, I will determine with my level of expertise, I will determine if there is validity, potential validity to ivermectin. She engaged in the fight because she had the moral responsibility to do it, and she did. And she acted upon that moral responsibility to put everything else aside in a challenge of a lifetime. And she validated, for example, that ivermectin is unquestionably a safe and effective treatment, far better than what they had been promoting before. And so,
yeah, it's a classic test, Lori. Yeah, it's a classic example of not waiting at headquarters, but getting to the trenches.
That's right. Yeah, running to the sound of the gun, right? And that's what these heroes deserve commendations for, not the financing and the security that these people that have been doing this to us think they have, because times are coming. There will be retribution.
So I encourage everybody listening to go and read this article. The other thing about this article is me and Stuart, as well as our organization, is hopeful that we can be part of doing a trial to help people with these long COVID symptoms based on this really understanding of the pathophysiology. And I will tell you, even in my own practice, even following and listening and learning from Risa and Doug has changed the lives of plenty of people that had been told that they just needed counseling, or they were just getting older, or, you know, the explanations that weren't explanations, they were, you know, pacifying. Doctors, if you don't know the answer, don't act as if you do. And I think that's the problem a lot. We need honest physicians that admit when they don't know. So with that, we will end this afternoon. It's been a pleasure being with you. Again, this is Dr. Jordan Varden, Dr. Stuart Tankersley, and we are on America Out Loud Pulse, and we are from Concerned Doctors, and you can visit us at concerneddoctors.org.